This free program is paid for by the listeners of WBAI New York. If you're not already a member, think about joining us to help keep free speech alive.
The evening news con informativo y la edición en español here on listener-supported, non-commercial WBAI 99.5 FM in New York City, where it is exactly midnight, which means that with any luck at all, it's time for this. Moorish, Orthodox, Radio, Crusade, Anarchism for the Global City, Radical Environmentalism for the Concrete Jungle, Esoteric Explorations of the Secret History of Rebel Culture, The Moorish Orthodox Radio Crusade. Every Tuesday at midnight after the news, only on listener-supported, non-commercial WBAI 99.5 FM in New York City. Be there.
Stopped into a restaurant and oh, it was a dream. From a half mile up the highway, you could see the fixtures gleam. They heated up the coffee cups with extra pressure steam. But the food was terrible. The waitresses were charming. They had such lovely eyes. Their smiles all matched exactly, and their uniforms likewise. Their hair was piled as sweetly as the topping on the pies. But the food was terrible. The decor was a symphony in brown and gold and white. The silver and the crockery would fill you with delight. The menu was a masterpiece, so witty and so bright. But the food was terrible. They must have spent a fortune on the furniture and such, on the placemats and the napkins, just like linen to the touch. So the budget for the kitchen really wasn't very much. And the food was terrible. Another generation will forget the taste of meat, of tomatoes from the garden, and of bread that's made of wheat. And they'll never even notice when it's plastic that they eat, that the food is terrible.
Thank you. This is a song about vegetables. They keep you regular. They're real good for you.
Respond to you.
Some people don't go for prunes. I don't know. I've always found that if they...
Call any vegetable. Call any vegetable. Call any vegetable. Think I'm a vegetable. Call it lonely at home. Call any vegetable. Call any vegetable. And the chances are good. Vegetable will respond to you. Rutabaga, 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 rutabaga.
A prune isn't really a vegetable. Cabbage is a vegetable.
High Canadian Rockies to the land of Mexico, city and the country, wherever you may go. Through the wild and windy weather, the sun and sleet and rain, comes a whistling through the country, this farmer labor train. Listen to the jingle and the rumble and the roar, she's rolling through New England to the West Pacific shore. It's a long time we've been waiting now, she's whistling round the bend. Roll on into Congress on that farmer labor train. There's lumberjacks and teamsters and sailors from the sea. Farming boys from Texas and the hills of Tennessee. There's miners from Kentucky, there's fishermen from Maine. Every worker in the country rides that farmer labor train. There's warehouse boys and truckers and guys that skin the cats. Men that run the steel mills, the furnace and the blast. Through the smoky factory cities or the hot and dusty plains. And the cushions there crowded on this farmer labor train. Listen to the jingle and the rumble and the roar. She's rolling through New England to the West Pacific shore. It's a long time we've been waiting now, she's whistling round the bend. Ride on into Congress on that farmer labor train. There's folks of every color and they're riding side by side in the swamps of Louisiana and across the Great Divide. From the wheat fields and the orchards and the lowing cattle range, and they're rolling on to victory on this farmer labor train. This train pulled into Washington a bright and happy day. When she steamed into the station, you could hear the people say, there's that farmer labor special, she's full of union men, heading on the White House on the farmer labor train.
Yeah, what a nostalgia trip. Remember when it was actually possible to, like, be optimistic about American politics? No, of course you don't, unless you were around way back in the New Deal era when Woody Guthrie was singing songs like Farmer Labor Train. Which is what you just heard there. Let's go over the music. Obviously, there's a common theme here. We opened up with Malvina Reynolds singing about the new restaurant. And boy, is that a song which I can relate to. Immediately followed by, Booker T and the MGs, Green Onions. Get it? We're kind of on a food theme, if you didn't pick that up. That was followed by Frank Zappa and the Mothers of Invention with their classic, Call Any Vegetable. And finally, if I'm not leaving anything out here, Woody Guthrie, Farmer Labor Train, singing way back when good old Franklin Delano Roosevelt was in the White House. And it was possible to at least cultivate the illusion that the people in Washington cared about the little guy. At least possible to deceive yourself. Anyway, where's Anne-Marie? I wish I knew where Anne-Marie was, because she's supposed to be the content provider tonight, and we are supposed to be talking about the abysmal state of culinary New York. Now, I'm going to attempt to play something from WNYC, actually. I believe that for our purposes, it'll be legal to rebroadcast something from another radio station, because it relates very closely to what we're going to be discussing tonight. So let's see if I can make this roll over and say uncle. Wait a minute. Is that... No. Is that it? All right. Trying to find the right link here, because probably it came to some of your... Here, let's see if this is the right link. It came to some of your attention that a few weeks ago on WNYC, on Brian Lehrer's show, Alec Baldwin, the actor, called in and was complaining about how Amsterdam Avenue is being taken over by these horrible mid-range restaurants, as he put it. Here, I think I'm zeroing in on this clip. I know I should have done it when the music was playing. Trying to find it. Let's see. And, you know, as if this is like the worst thing about New York is that, you know, we've got too many mid-range restaurants here. Let's see if this is the right clip. Let's give this a listen.
Hi, this is Brian Lehrer. You're listening to WNYC On Demand. Podcasts, streaming, and MP3 downloads available when at WNYC.
Pleasant neighborhood. New York is a...
Begin by reimagining the streets of the Upper West Side, because tonight at the JCC on Amsterdam Avenue, a project called the New York Streets Renaissance Project is being unveiled for the neighborhood, and they want your ideas. What do you want your block, your street, to be like? And these ideas could apply to any neighborhood in our area, but their target for today is the Upper West Side. So with me now is Mark Gordon, the founder and president of the Open Planning Project, one of the organizations behind the New York City Street. And we're delighted to have the New York City Transportation Commissioner, Jeanette Sadiq Khan, who will also be appearing at tonight's event. And Commissioner Mark Gordon, thanks for coming on WNYC today. Good morning.
Thank you.
Good morning.
Mark, tell us more about your NYC Streets Renaissance Project.
Well, the New York City Streets Renaissance Campaign sets out to envision our streets reoriented for people. So take away a lot of the traffic and think about what you can do with that space. You could have amazing public plazas, peaceful outdoor cafes, kids playing in the streets again, and just basic safety, a safe, pleasant neighborhood. New York is a fantastically dense city.
So you've already dropped a bombshell, which is get a lot of cars out of the streets.
Yes. I mean, the automobile is a spatially very inefficient way to travel. And in a city as dense as New York, it's just an inappropriate technology to rely for such a large amount of transportation.
So what exactly is going to happen at the JCC tonight?
So we're launching the Upper West Side Streets Renaissance campaign. And we have videos, we have an exhibit, and we have Jeanette Sadiq Khan speaking, and Jan Gehl, who is a fantastic Danish urban planner, talking about what they've done in Copenhagen and what some of...
All right, well, at some point, you know, on this broadcast, Alec Baldwin calls in. That's the point where I'm trying to get, and goes on, you know, that when mid-level restaurants, mid-range restaurants are like the plague of New York. Here, let's see if I can bounce around and find it.
cops out in front of their own building. That was the only question I had.
Okay, maybe we need the sanitation commissioner or DEP here. But
well, there is actually, Brian, and to address Alex's concern.
Yeah, there we go.
Is a
and I'm really enjoying it by and large because
over to the streets of New York, and you'll see if you go to Chelsea on 9th Avenue, this is the first time that a bike lane has been buffered by parked cars, and it's the first time it's been tried in New York, and it's the kind of innovative ideas that we're exploring to make the streets more livable for New Yorkers.
I think that bike lane is great, and I hope it can spread to more parts of the city. So I invited Upper West Siders to call in and re-envision the streets of your neighborhood. And look who's calling to out himself as an Upper West Sider. It is the actor Alec Baldwin,
right,
who, among other things, stars in 30 Rock when they're writing 30 Rock. Hi, Alec.
Hey, Brian. How are you?
Good. You've been a guest on this show, and this is your debut as a caller. Thanks for chiming in.
Well, I'm truly calling. I want to find out if you have a job for me, Brian. I'm out of a job now. So
I don't know. Well, I'll have to check the HR department.
We'll talk. I just wanted to mention quickly that having lived on the Upper West Side for many years and really enjoying it by and large because it's bordered by two great parks and there's a lot of low buildings there, so the light is so spectacular as opposed to a lot of other parts of New York. I mean, one of the reasons I stay on the West Side is that the light is such great light there. But I wonder what the people who are guests on the show think of the fact that I mean, you can take all the cars you want to off the road, but I still think the Upper West Side is one of the dirtiest parts of New York. I mean, I really think that there's just there's so many bars and kind of mid-priced restaurants there, and I find that the Upper West Side is not where you see Central Park Conservancy taking care of the park or the Doe Fund taking care of the Broadway malls. That's one thing. But Amsterdam Avenue is still pretty horrible.
Commissioner?
I'm wondering what they envision about. Is there any way that the city can really, really improve enforcement of the owners of these buildings taking care of what's out in front of their own building? That was the only question I had.
Okay, maybe we need the sanitation commissioner or DEP here. But
well, there is actually, Brian, and to address Alex's concern, there is an initiative that we're working on an interagency basis on to address the streetscapes of New York City and to ensure that they are as attractive and as aesthetically pleasing and as green and sustainable as they can be. So we're reviewing both the materials that we have on the streets, everything that's out there right now, street furniture, et cetera, and looking for a more sustainable approach to what it is that we are putting out there, whether it's news racks or whatever we've got on the streets. So that's part one of it. The I think the streets actually, if you talk to the sanitation commissioner, John Dougherty, are actually cleaner than they've been before, but I do understand what you're talking in terms of the clutter that you see around there, and that's been a prime initiative for Mayor Bloomberg.
Alec, before you go, and tell me if you don't want to go there, it's okay, but if you can stand a question on the writer's strike, we saw your co-star from 30 Rock, Tina Fey, prominently on the picket line yesterday, and this strike to me raises an issue for a lot of our listeners who download content for free from the website and from the web and think they're just getting over on like big record companies and stuff.
All right,
now,
well here he's kind
of sudden,
like
here is
going off into another thing. Are they going to get back to the restaurant tip? We're interested in the restaurant tip tonight.
What do you think about that issue?
Well, I think that piracy is a problem. I don't know if it's a problem that's as large as the studios make it out to be, that they're using it as an excuse not to grant the writers a real piece of DVD.
Well, this is actually an issue which is very close to my heart as a struggling writer whose career has been destroyed by the Internet. But that's not what we're talking about tonight. Let's see if they get back to the restaurant tip.
Everybody.
Then you also have the
and as a friend of mine very, I think, astutely put it, look for the thing that the studios are holding the most fast to. And the thing that they're defending now is Internet downloads and content, because they know that's the future. 10 years from now, they're going to be making most of their money from that. Even DVDs will start to fall by the wayside.
Well, there's a depressing thought.
I think that the writers, everyone in the business knows that the strike is unfortunate. It's going to put a lot of people out of work. It's going to put me out of work. But it's something that had to be done. They really do have a legitimate beef.
Well,
what do you know?
Thanks for answering that, and thanks for calling about your neighborhood.
Thank you, Brian. Bye-bye.
Take care.
Well, what do you know? Actually, Alec Baldwin was taking a progressive position on the writer's strike, but he was sure taking a reactionary position on the whole question of culinary New York. Now, once again, I was just rebroadcasting there I hope I wasn't violating any copyrights or FCC regs, but just for purposes of discussion here on WBAI, which you're listening to at the moment, WBAI 99.5 FM, listener-supported non-commercial radio here in New York City, that was a rebroadcast, a slight reprise rebroadcast of a show on WNYC with Brian Lehr, of course, on November 21st, where they were speaking with Jeanette Sadiq Khan, who is the commissioner of the New York City Department of Transportation, and Mark Gordon, president and founder of the Open Planning Project, to discuss the future of New York City's streetscape. And the show was called the NYC Streets Renaissance. And notoriously, Alec Baldwin called in and kvetched about mid-priced ranged restaurants, as you know, as if this was like, you know, the plague of New York City, and this is what is like, you know, making Amsterdam Avenue unlivable for you know, his elite upper crust echelons. And you know, it's when I heard this, my blood just boiled, because like I've been on this like trip for quite a while now, where one of the things which is really bugging me about how New York is changing, all right, and I still, you know, all New Yorkers, and I think particularly native New Yorkers such as myself, have got a sort of a love-hate relationship with the city. We love it and we hate it at the same time. And, you know, of course, it's always been that way. But I have to say that the things that I love about New York City are shrinking year by year. They are contracting. And the things that I hate about New York City are growing and expanding and hypertrophying, in a state of hypertrophy. Is there a word, hypertrophying? Perhaps there is. But in any event, you know what I mean, right? And one of the things which has been, you know, really eating me alive about the state of New York City is precisely the disappearance of mid-priced restaurants, right? All of my favorite eateries in recent years have been going belly up. And you know, New York City used to be the world capital of cheap ethnic eats, you know, mom and pop, family run type restaurants, making, you know, really good, wholesome, you know, authentic food from, you know, everywhere in the world, whether it's, you know, from falafel joints or you know, the latest addition is Mexican restaurants, which, I mean, you couldn't really find a good family run Mexican restaurant in New York 10 years ago. Now they're all over the place, thank goodness. And, you know, the Indo-Pakistani places, and you know, that long-standing, you know, staple of New York City, mid-priced fare, the neighborhood Italian restaurant, right? And, you know, they've all been going up, you know, all over the city. In Manhattan, they're just about been exterminated, you know, and really, you know, if you want to get, like, good ethnic middle-priced fare in New York City now, you pretty much got to go out to the outer boroughs. There's still plenty of it in Queens, thank goodness. But, you know, it's largely, it's largely been squeezed out of Manhattan. And to me, you know, one of the real nails in the coffin of New York City was when my favorite Italian neighborhood restaurant, La Focacciaria, on First Avenue between 8th and 7th Streets, closed just about a year ago. That had been my favorite place in the world. My favorite Italian restaurant in the world was La Focacciaria, on First Avenue, in the East Village. And, you know, it was like run by Sicilians. I think actually in its final years, most of the people working in the kitchen were Mexican. But, the guy who founded it was, you know, a real old school Sicilian guy. And, you know, the food was totally authentic, totally delicious, and, you know, it was a completely informal scene, and the prices were absolutely reasonable, and, you know, you could get stuffed there for, you know, under $10, you know, maybe, you know, $12, including a glass of wine. And man, was it good, and was it authentic? You know, it wasn't like, you know, so many, you know, these like pseudo Italian joints. It's kind of like artlessly prepared, and it's like, you know, this bogus Americanized Italian food where they just throw some, like, you know, some sauce out of a can, you know, down on top of it, just splashing red paint on it, on top of the pizza, like my Italian mother says whenever she complains about that kind of food. This wasn't like that. This was like real, you know, old school, authentic Sicilian style, you know, really prepared with loving care, not skimping on the garlic, not skimping on the olive oil. And, man, you know, that place was like, you know, so authentic and so real and so good. And now it is so gone. And I'm sorry, New York City just isn't the same without it. And I could go on and on and on down the list. You know, there was, so many, just starting in my own neighborhood, so many of the old Polish and Ukrainian and Jewish places where you could get pierogies and borscht and stuff like that have now either closed or, like, gone upscale. And now, like, you know, they're selling arugula pierogies for, you know, $15 a plate and nonsense like that. And you know, let's see, what else? There was that wonderful, Chino Latino place, you know, run by Chinese, Cubans, where was it? 8th Avenue around, 20th Street somewhere. Remember that place? It was like in a diner. It was like a real old school diner type restaurant. You know, it was like a real silver line diner. And, you know, now that's closed and it's been taken over by some other, you know, place where you can't afford to breathe the air. And, all right, it wasn't very good, but just on the subject of diners, it was like a real, you know, a real old school diner, was on the corner of Great Jones and Lafayette, just a couple of blocks away from me, where, you know, I used to get good cheap breakfast specials back in the day. Long gone now. Of course, they just recently closed the, what was it? The Moondance Diner, right? If I got the name right, down on, wouldn't that be, 6th Avenue over there, right? Unless I'm confused. And, you know, I could just go on and on and on. You know, out in Brooklyn, there was this great, Salvadoran joint on 5th Avenue called Los Choros, where I used to go to get my, yuca con mojo de ajo, and it was just so good and so cheap, and now, once again, so gone. And what are these places being replaced with? Well, overwhelmingly, they're being replaced with either corporate fast food, just like you could get out in the suburbs or anywhere in America, you know, replaced with, you know, McDonald's and Burger King and garbage like that. Or I'm including it in that category, even though it's not quite so economical. I'm including, you know, corporate chains which are like one step up, like Starbucks or that, Chipotle pseudo Mexican grill chain, which, in case you don't know, is owned by McDonald's. So even though those places aren't quite really so economical, I'm including them in that category because they're, you know, they're basically fast food chains. So they're being replaced either with that, or they're being replaced with, highfalutin, cloth napkin, overpriced restaurants for yuppies. And, you know, I'm not, you know, such a reverse snob, so to speak, that I'll never set foot in a cloth napkin restaurant. You know, I'm on special occasions, when I feel like splurging, you know, sure, why not? But it's gotta be a good one. And it's gotta be one where, you know, it's not overpriced. And most of them now are like A, mediocre, and B, overpriced. Right? And, you know, the most blatant clue that you are, not getting real food, so to speak, right, is that, they give you this unorthodox nouveau cuisine jive, you know, where instead of, like, you know, the salad on the side alongside, your piece of fish or whatever it is that you ordered, you know, they pile it all on top of each other and create these, like, mini skyscrapers on your plate. And, of course, tiny little portions, microscopic portions that you're paying, you know, like, $20 a plate for. You know, and it's just, you know, they aren't really taking pride in presenting something which is, you know, like, which is authentic and a part of a genuine culinary tradition. Instead, they're, like, trying to, like, bamboozle you with, like, a gimmick. of, wow, you know, we're like more creative and more innovative than any other restaurant out there. You know, like for instance, you know, I mean, I was joking when I said arugula pierogies, but not joking by much. I mean, it really is. It's down to that kind of level, you know, where they'll just, you know, come up with any like off the wall gimmick to try to show that, you know, oh, our chefs are so much more creative than all of the other ones out there. So, you know, and what's being squeezed out is, once again, you know, the real, authentic, old-school places which are just offering good ethnic food, where, you know, it's run by people from Pakistan or Mexico or Egypt or wherever, and they really are trying to, like, you know, make it just the way they made it back in the old country. And to me, you know, that's what New York is all about. That's why I live in this city, apart from the fact that I don't know where else on earth I could live if even I ever did decide to move and leave the city. I would have no idea where to go. But you know, the real authentic culture in this town is like, it's disappearing. It's being squeezed out by either corporate monoculture on one hand or by, you know, yuppie culture on the other. So, and of course, you know, these two seeming opposites are actually, there's a paradoxical unity, as they're always is, as students of dialectics know, because, you know, those yuppies who are patronizing these nouveau cuisine joints, where everything's got to be so idiosyncratic and so original that there isn't any respect for genuine culinary tradition, well, all of those yuppies who are spending their money there are making, you know, their money ultimately off of corporate America, right? They're making their money off of the stock market and so on, and off of corporate America and the whole, you know, big global machine, which is fueling the hyper proliferation of the monoculture and of, you know, McDonald's and Burger King and Subway and Blimpies and blah blah blah. And I particularly have a grudge against Subway because, you know, they're like, you know, marketing pseudo New York culture, right? I mean, their whole gimmick is that they're New York. And of course, they're not New York. They're global, right? And they're offering the same, you know, global crap that they offer in every one of their eateries all over the world. And it's probably, you know, there's probably a Subway's restaurant in Istanbul at this point. But their, you know, their whole gimmick is that it's like, you know, oh, New York culture, and the wallpaper, which is of course identical no matter where you go, is like, you know, it's pictures of old New York on the wallpaper. You know, you can go into the Subway restaurant out in Eugene, Oregon, or Istanbul, Turkey, or wherever, and it's going to be the same, wallpaper showing these images of old New York. So, you know, it's like, wasn't it Baudrillard who said that everything is replaced by its own simulacrum? Here, you know, real old New York is being squeezed out by the economic forces of capitalism, which, of course, ironically, is the same economic forces which created old New York. And at the same time, you know, the, like, simulacrum of pseudo New York is, like, you know, spreading all over the world like an octopus. And, you know, I mean, you can get what they call bagels out west. You know, I mean, I was recently out in Missoula, Montana, and, you know, you can get bagels there. But the thing is, like, you can get blueberry bagels, right? And they call them authentic New York bagels. Well, you know, I got news for you. Here in New York City, nobody eats blueberry bagels. That's an abomination. That's not an authentic New York bagel. In fact, I would hesitate to even call it a bagel. So, you know, here we are. It's 12:34 on listener-supported non-commercial WBAI 99.5 FM in New York City. And this is the Moorish Orthodox Radio Crusade, and I'm Bill Weinberg ranting about food. You know, the holidays are coming up, and we're all thinking about food. And actually, this was Anne-Marie's idea for a radio show, and she's not showing up tonight. So I guess the burden is falling on my shoulders to rant about food. And, I always say that there are two institutions in New York City where if either of these institutions ever fold, I will leave New York. And one of them is WBAI. If WBAI, so everybody out there who, you know, made a pledge during the marathon, you know, please do pay your pledge, right? And we've got another mini fund drive coming up, which is why we're going to be preempted next week. So please, you know, if you're not a member, please do become a member and support WBAI, because with all of its warts and contradictions, and believe me, we're all very, very, very much aware of the warts and the contradictions, okay? We really, really are. Nonetheless, it really is a vital institution. And it's the one place on the airways, for instance, where, you know, we can provide some real, genuine counter-propaganda to, Alec Baldwin getting on the airways of WNYC and dissing what's good about New York, you know? So that's one institution. The other institution is Katz's Delicatessen. And, you know, I recognize that Katz's Delicatessen, which, if you don't know, is on the corner of Houston and Ludlow on the Lower East Side. You know, I recognize that Katz's Delicatessen is in some ways, you know, it's become a museum. I mean, it almost is a simulacrum of itself, but not quite. Almost, because, you know, I understand it's kind of been artificially preserved for the tourists. It's kind of like preserved under a glass bell, so to speak, for the tourists. And, you know, I mean, they sort of like, it's almost self-conscious about the fact that they haven't changed the decor since the 1940s. And there's still a neon sign that says, send the salami to your boy in the army, you know, and all that. But I say, you know, not quite, because, you know, the fare hasn't changed. It's still exactly the same food. You know, they aren't, like, offering you arugula knishes. It's still real McCoy, you know, old-school Jewish cuisine. And the prices haven't even gone up that much. They've gone up a little bit, but not that much. And they still have this, you know, quaint, idiosyncratic, archaic system in place where, you know, they give you the ticket when you walk in, and then, like, you know, they stamp your ticket at the counter, and you pay up, on your way out by showing the ticket. You know, it's real, you know, idiosyncratic New York kind of thing. So, I'm so glad that Katz's Delicatessen is there, even if I don't actually go into Katz's very often these days, especially since I found out that they make their French fries with beef tallow. So really, that doesn't leave me a hell of a lot to eat there. I can eat the knishes, and I can eat the potato salad, and I have to, you know, the pickles are just great, best pickles, especially those pickled tomatoes. Love them, those green tomatoes, you know? Real green, it's green onions is what the song by Booker T and the MGs was. This is green tomatoes. Maybe I'll try to find a green tomato song as well. There ought to be a song about green tomatoes, don't you think? Those pickled green tomatoes, oh yeah, they're just delicious, aren't they? You know what I'm talking about. So, for all those years that I ate the French fries there, not aware that they made them with beef tallow. And the only reason I even became aware they made it with beef tallow was because it was the whole controversy about, what do they call them, the trans fats or whatever. And, Katz has kind of came clean and said, no, we don't use trans fats, we use beef tallow. And, you know, you should almost really applaud them, even though, you know, I mean, strictly speaking, I try to avoid animal products, although not fastidiously. We'll discuss this on a future show. I know Anne Marie is planning a show about vegetarianism and its history. I do eat seafood. I do admit to, you know, it's a guilty pleasure because I recognize it's somewhat politically problematic, but I do eat fish, and I do occasionally, although not a lot, I do eat dairy products and eggs. I don't avoid them fastidiously. But I stay away from red meat, and I stay away from poultry, and, I just can't, you know, now that I know that they make their fries in beef tallow at Katz's, I just can't really quite bring myself to enjoy the fries the way I used to. You know what I'm saying? But I'm still so glad that the Katz's is there. And I'm even glad that they're using beef tallow instead of trans fats, because that would be even worse to cook the fries. And if Katz's ever goes, and if WBAI ever goes, I'm leaving New York, you know? I really am. So what else would fall into that category? Well, I'm still so glad, on the whole authentic Jewish culinary trip. I'm also so glad that Yonah Schimmel Knishery is there, even if I don't go in there very often. And I'm so glad that B&H Dairy is still there, even if I don't go in very often. I don't patronize those places as much as I used to. For one reason, I'm just more in the habit of eating at home, trying to save money. You know, I'm living entirely as a freelancer now for the past 5 years or so, so I don't have that weekly paycheck anymore. I tend to eat at home more. And to tell you the truth, you know, when I'm going to go out and get some good, cheap, authentic food in the hood these days, I mostly go to Mexican joints. There's, like, good, really cheap, really authentic Mexican joints which have opened up. Mostly, you know, folks from Puebla, and they make not just, you know, this Tex-Mex pseudo-jive stuff, you know, this pseudo-Mexican stuff, you know, those big, gigantic, overstuffed tortillas. That's like Tex-Mex or Cal-Mex. Nobody in Mexico actually eats that, right? They make real Mexican stuff. They really make, you know, huevos rancheros and enchiladas con salsa de mole and what do they call those delicious fried tortilla strips? It's right on the tip of my tongue. You all know what I'm talking about. What do they call those fried tortilla chips and salsa? You know what I'm talking about. It's right on the tip of my tongue. Chilaquiles! Right, I told you it was on the tip of my tongue. Chilaquiles. So, anyway, you know, I'm so glad that those places still exist. And, of course, you know, if you want real McCoy Indo-Pakistani food, you can still go up to the Little India on Lexington Avenue in the 20s, or better yet, go out to 74th Street in Jackson Heights, Queens. I have to confess, much, much better than the Little India in my neighborhood, which is on 4th Street. So, you know, I mean, it's not completely exterminated yet, thank goodness, but it's really, really endangered. You know, these middle price range restaurants, which to me are the heart and soul of culinary New York, are really endangered of being squeezed out by grossly inferior, corporate fast food pseudo cuisine, which I don't even call real food. I mean, McDonald's to me is not food. I don't even call those places restaurants, right? You know, I mean, to me, you know, that's like, you know, it's just not food, right? It's like pseudo food. It's not even really food. It's not even a simulacrum of culture. It's a simulacrum of food. It's not really food, right? I mean, I wouldn't consider actually ingesting it, so it's not food. I mean, even if I ate meat, I wouldn't consider ingesting it. So, or, you know, on one hand, or, you know, overpriced, mediocre, pretentious, you know, yuppie, haute cuisine or pseudo haute cuisine, you know, nouveau cuisine, you know, inferior grub on the other hand. So, that's what we're ranting about tonight. And I can see that people are calling in. And, you know, given that Anne-Marie doesn't seem to be in a hurry to show up, I guess we're going to have a reprise performance of this show when she does show up some other time. Or maybe she will show up for the second half of the show. But now it's, you know, my question, here's my question, which I'm going to pose to the audience, is for starters, you know, I mean, a part of the reason we're on this food kick is because the holidays are coming up. And, you know, we frequently ask query our listeners in previous years as to, you know, what are you doing for Thanksgiving? We all recognize that Thanksgiving is a bit of a problematic holiday for those of us who are politically conscious and are aware of American history. But probably it's also a holiday which most of us, at least those of us who grew up in this country, we probably grew up with Thanksgiving. And, you know, how do you feel about the holiday which is coming up? How are you going to be celebrating it? Are you going to be, in fact, you know, doing it with family, with friends? Are you just going to be ignoring it at home? Are you eating in or are you going out? And so we're going to be looking at both sides of the whole culinary question here, both the eating in and the going out. Are you actually going to be doing turkey if you're going to be, you know, eating in, if you're going to be preparing the meal yourself, or, you know, your mom or your grandmom or your aunt or your uncle or your in-laws or whoever it is? You know, are they going to be using, you know, some horrible corporate butterball turkey, which once again is a case of the phenomenon of everything being replaced by its own simulacrum? It's really kind of a pseudo turkey. It's like an industrially produced pod turkey. It's not like a real turkey. Or are you going to be like, you know, getting a, a special mail order organic free range turkey from heirloom turkey stock. You know, you can do that, but you have to send away for it, and it costs a lot of money. And you see, that's my other fear, is that the elements which are left of authentic culture are becoming a luxury for the elites, and they're becoming boutiqueified, and they're actually losing any kind of like real niche in the economy, which is like available to the masses. And they're just becoming like, a part. They're sort of like being gobbled up by this whole tendency towards pretension and haute cuisine, and not even haute cuisine. That's actually, technically speaking, not right. Nouveau cuisine is what I mean, right? Now, I don't think this is necessarily the case. I think that you can, get an heirloom turkey and not be a part of that whole, boutiqueified trip. But unfortunately, I think that's the general trend, I mean, for instance, I don't happen to eat turkey myself. I don't eat red meat, and I don't eat poultry. Those are my only fairly inflexible dietary restrictions are that I don't eat red meat and I don't eat poultry. I mean, as far as I'm concerned, everything else is fair game, if you'll forgive the pun. So I don't eat turkey myself, although I respect the people out there, the farmers out there who are struggling, even if they have to boutiqueify to stay afloat in this globalized economy. I salute the farmers out there who are keeping alive the heirloom turkey varieties. And similarly, to get those heirloom tomatoes at the farmer's market sometimes, but especially in the summer, I go through a lot of tomatoes in the summer, make a lot of salad and stuff like that, right? But I'm also, concerned about, especially since I'm like really watching my wallet these days, $3 a pound for tomatoes or more, sometimes for those really rare heirloom tomatoes, $5 a pound for tomatoes, that's a little bit, a little bit unaffordable, guys, for tomatoes. It really is. So, but still, you can get good organic tomatoes, even if they're not heirloom. They're good, locally made, locally produced organic tomatoes grown out in Jersey or up in the Hudson Valley at the farmers markets here in New York City. Usually I go up to the Union Square Farmers Market in the summer. And I'm glad that those farmers markets exist, very, very important. And I support all these, even though I'm actually not a part of them, I support, community supported agriculture projects. And, I am, I do frequently shop. Unfortunately, I let my membership run out, but I do frequently shop at the 4th Street Good Food Co-op, which is sort of along the same lines. And, supporting local farmers and getting good food. And, it's still possible, even without joining, the yuppie elites, which is certainly not an option to me, even if I ever wanted to do so. But the thing is, you got to kind of work at it. You really do. You have to kind of work at it to eat good. And, a final point on this is that, haute cuisine actually draws from peasant cuisine in very much the same, way that, classical music, draws a lot of its motifs. I'm talking about, classical music. Not the contemporary stuff. I'm talking about, Vivaldi and Bach and Beethoven and blah, blah, blah. It drew its, motifs from peasant folk music, right? And similarly, haute cuisine draws most of its inspiration, ultimately, if you go back far enough, from peasant cuisine. And in fact, a lot of these, boutiqueified places today will actually, call their, food like peasant food, peasant style, country soup, blah, blah, blah. And then, offer it for, $16 a plate or upwards, which is, that's just for the appetizer. That's just for the soup. So, which is a bit of a contradiction, right? But, ultimately, good food has emerged from, the struggle, and believe me, it really has been a struggle, of, peasant cultures, which are deeply rooted in the land. For whether it's in southern Italy and Poland, which is where my own peeps came from, or in the Indian subcontinent, or in southern Mexico, or anywhere in the world, all of those locales and cultures being represented here in New York City. the struggle, and it really has been a struggle, you know, in the lean times. You know, there's also good times, but in the lean times, and there's been plenty of lean times over the centuries, the struggles not just to make it, but to make it nice. And this, I argue, is a political struggle. It's a political struggle, even if it's not consciously a political struggle. Not just to make it, but to make it nice. And that, you know, we don't just live by bread alone. And that, you know, a good food and conviviality is a part of what makes life worth living. And that we needn't feel, on one hand, as, you know, too many of the political obsessive purist types out there, you know, we needn't feel guilty about enjoying Epicurean pleasures from time and again. We needn't, you know, lead a Spartan existence as a matter of principle in order to be politically conscious. And nor need we surrender to you know, the ranks of boutiqueified nouveau cuisine, even if we were of the economic means to join that little niche of society, in order to have good food. Right? There can still be good food which is wholesome and available to the working class, or there at least should be, right? Because, once again, it's a struggle. And just as it was a struggle against privation, material privation, to not only make it, but to make it nice, as I say, back, you know, when our peasant forebears were scratching the dirt in southern Italy or wherever it is that your peeps come from. Just using that as an example, because that's where my peeps come from on my maternal side. And that's where they were real peasants, and in fact still are real peasants. I went back and visited them, as listeners know, a couple of years ago, and they're doing okay today, but they're still peasants. You know, they're like peasants who made good. They're like kulaks, so to speak. But, of course, when they came over from Italy two generations ago, they were not doing well, which is why they left Italy, obviously. So, you know, just as it was a struggle back in their time, not just to make it, but to make it good, you know, a struggle against sheer privation and, you know, trying to, you know, just coax a livelihood from the soil. Today, it's still a struggle against privation for many, many, many people all around the planet, of course, but now it's also a struggle against the corporate monoculture, because you could, if you're not a person of means, if you are a person who's struggling economically, you could surrender to the temptation of fast food and live on garbage and get diabetes. And there's many, many people all around the world who do that. So that's the other thing that we have to struggle against today. It's not merely against privation, but it's also a struggle which is on the cultural front. And it always has been, of course, but perhaps today somewhat more explicitly. So, what are you doing for Thanksgiving? What do you think about the state of culinary New York? Give us a call at 212-209-2900. That's 212-209-2900. 212-209-2900. Once again, that number is 212-209-2900. It'd be great to hear from some people who we haven't heard from before. You know what I'm saying? Some new voices. Yes, imagine that. Some new voices. 212-209-2900. I'm looking for more music to play. More music to play. More music to play. Here, should we play some more? Looking. Oh, yeah. Here. Let's play some of this. Taking the Wayback Machine here. Ready to take the Wayback Machine way back to the era of Lead Belly.
I'm in New York City, I'm gonna load my line. New York City is a hard to find in New York City. Woo! He did. He York today, people got to know my line. It's one thing, folks, ask you to do. Catch a bus and ride up Fifth Avenue in New York City. Ain't that a city? New York City, people got to know my line. When you ride that bus, keep it on your mind. Ride that bus and you're gonna cost you a dime in New York City. Woo! Ain't that a city? New York City, people got to know my line. When it can get cloudy, look like rain. Step down the side and catch you subway train in New York City. Woo! Ain't that a city? New York City, people got to know my line. Ever go down in Georgia, I'm gonna walk and talk and tell everybody about the city of New York is New York City. Woo! Ain't that a city? New York City, people got to know my line. Ever go down in Louisiana, walk and tell, stand on the top of town here and it's called Helen, New York City. Ain't that a city? New York City, people got to know my line. Planes on the ground and they won't keep still. Wanna catch me a plane and ride to Sugar Hill in New York City. Ain't that a city? New York City, people got to know my line.
All right, Lead Belly singing about our good old New York City. Yeah, let's see. It's now, tell you what, I'm going to give a station break at 3 minutes of midnight. Oh, 12:58, I'm sorry. 2 minutes of 1 o'clock in the morning. Here on listener-supported, non-commercial WBAI 99.5 FM in New York City, right? I'm Bill Weinberg. This is the Morris Orthodox Radio Crusade. We don't know where Anne-Marie is. Anne-Marie, are you listening out there? We're worried about you. Where are you? Okay. We're going to take some phone calls. We're talking about food. The number is 212-209-2900, 212-209-2900. Everybody who's calling in, stay on the line. I'm going to read the one announcement that I brought. And then we're going to go straight to phone calls. You people who are, turn as soon as you hear me pick up. As soon as you hear me pick up, turn down the radio. Don't hesitate. As soon as you hear me pick up, turn down the radio so we don't get any annoying bursts of feedback, okay? All right. I just have one announcement. This is actually not going to be happening until Tuesday, December 11th, which I believe is, 3 weeks from tonight. But I'm going to announce it now anyway because we're apparently preempted next week. And this is an important one, which is Peter Lamborn Wilson, the founder and Hierophant Emeritus of this radio show, the Moorish Orthodox Radio Crusade, is going to be speaking at his annual Chaos Day lecture on Tuesday, December 11th at 7:30 p.m. at the Libertarian Book Club in its new location, which is at the Living Theater at 21 Clinton Street in Lower East Side, just south of Houston Street. And he's going to be speaking about what? I'll tell you. The Anarchist Forum, the Libertarian Book Club's Anarchist Forum, will present Peter Lamborn Wilson, author of many books and articles on Sufism, piracy, and anarchist values. Will be making his usual Chaos Day speech, except it's never usual. It's always very unusual. When he's going to be speaking about, believe it or not, what is really wrong with the USA. leave it to Peter. You know, he's so relentlessly esoteric. And this year, his speech is going to be about a theme which is as broadly generalistic as you can imagine. And yet, I'm sure that he will have a very unique and esoteric angle on it, because he always does. And he says that he will be not saying the same rubbish that one often hears on the street or from the media. Yes, we hope. Rather, Peter will explore in a critical and philosophical manner many elements of our lives and environment that once seldom years discussed, but which are still vital parts of what needs to be changed. Right. As is always the case at the Anarchist Forum, Peter will listen to the audience and respond to their comments and questions. So hopefully he'll also be talking about food, because that's definitely one thing which is very, very wrong with the United States of America. And New York used to be a cultural oasis from this pathology, from this culinary pathology. But increasingly that is not the case, or we should say it is only decreasingly the case. So, once again, this is going to be happening 3 weeks from tonight, Tuesday, December 11th, 7:30 p.m., at the Libertarian Book Club's Anarchist Forum, Peter Lamborn Wilson's annual Chaos Day Lecture. And that is going to be meeting at the Living Theater, 21 Clinton Street. Once again, that's December 11th, 7:30 p.m., at the Living Theater, 21 Clinton Street. And now, I'll tell you what, we're going to forge boldly into the unknown and take your listener phone calls. WBAI, turn down your radio.
Okay.
You're on the air.
Ah, this conversation is right up my alley. For years I've been working, and, you know, working a lot of time, so I have to get fast foods, cause me to get high blood pressure. Now I have to look at everything I eat.
Right. Well, you know, I mean, the good thing about New York, and unfortunately it's not as much the case as it was, you know, even as recently as 5 or 10 years ago, is that you used to be able to get even good, really fast food here. And I don't mean fast food with a capital F. I don't mean corporate fast food. But you used to be able to get non-corporate food, which was fast.
Well, at night it's hard to get that. You would have to find something that's fast, fast, fast. I mean, if you can get salads and things like that, it would have been nice, but I wasn't into it like that then.
Right, well, you can still get falafel, you can still get pizza, which is, I mean, you don't want to eat a steady diet of pizza, of course, but, you know, it's okay.
Mm. Well, now you have to look at exactly what you're putting in your body.
Right.
I mean, salad dressing, if you look at it, how much sodium it has in it, and pasta. And
okay, well, you know, when you say salad dressing, you're talking about the kind that you buy in a bottle. Right?
That's true.
I mean, you don't have to buy it in a bottle. Buy oil and vinegar. Just mix them together, throw a little pepper, and you've got wonderful salad dressing.
Well, it could be a taste if you acquired that taste.
I don't know. To me, that's the best salad dressing. You can't go wrong. Balsamic vinegar, olive oil, and just, you know, a dash of pepper, or, you know, maybe a little bit of tahini, some lemon. Make your own, man.
You're right.
DIY, you know what I'm saying?
Right. But New York, I mean, well, it's just a culture where things are fast, 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 especially in New York.
Right, but you see, the thing is that it used to be fast and good, and now it's increasingly fast and bad.
That's true.
Right?
That's true.
Yeah.
I wouldn't buy anything from that Mickey so-and-so.
Right, exactly. Or from that Chipotle pseudo-Mexican grill, which is owned by Mickey so-and-so.
Okay. Great speaking to you.
Thank you.
Okay, good night.
WBAI, you're on the air. You're on the air.
Hello?
Hello.
Oh, what a wonderful topic you're talking about tonight.
Yeah, I agree. Turn down your radio, please.
Okay, I did. I'm not with it anymore.
Good.
But, you know, this is just so funny because my ex and I, who are now living together, but that's a whole other story. This is
Well, then I guess he's not really your ex.
I don't know what he is. He's, like, upstairs in the bed, and I'm downstairs cleaning a turkey, and I have to go decontaminate myself because I have turkey poison on me.
Turkey poison?
Well, you know, all the blood and all the, you know, stuff.
All right, so am I to understand that you are a vegetarian who is preparing turkey for family?
Well, I am not really a vegetarian, although I do not like meat. I just don't care for it. But I am making a turkey.
Okay, and
so whatever that means.
All right. Well, please, why don't you tell us about that turkey? What kind of turkey is it?
I don't know. I went to the store, and I didn't know if I was going to have time to defrost the thing or unthaw the thing or whatever you're supposed to do with the bird. And so I was asking all these people in the store. the market over there, and this lady directed me towards this bird. It's the better bird, and da-da-da. So I bought the bird, and it's a fresh bird.
Okay, well, at least it's fresh. That's good.
Okay, yeah, that's what she said was better. So anyway, I'm trying to do this turkey thing, and here I put the radio on, which I always have on. I don't listen to anything else. I've been listening to the station since 1969, and this is the first time
you got me beat by called in. Really?
Yeah.
And that's music to my ears. You've been listening to this. You've been listening to this station since I was in first grade, and this is the first time you're ever calling in?
I swear on my whatever.
Wow.
Yep.
That makes me feel great. It's really an honor.
I mean, I said, I'm doing this thing in the kitchen over here, and I said, I have to call this guy. It's just so, like, I got to talk about this because this is so true. Like, this, like, what, I don't even know what they're serving in these restaurants. Like, if I go to look at the menu, like, what is that, you know?
Exactly.
Like, I'm like you. I grew up in an Italian family, and, you know, we had delicious food, and, you know, it was wonderful. It wasn't all this roasted tomatoes and all this other stuff.
Well, you know, I mean, like, I'm not opposed to roasted tomatoes, and I'm not opposed to, you know, food for new food, which I haven't tried before. What I am opposed to is pretension, you know?
Exactly. And, they, what do they got over there? Like, lobster raviolis and all this kind of stuff, you know. And
I'm not rigidly opposed. In fact, I will confess that, you know, I have eaten and enjoyed salmon ravioli. I will confess that.
Okay, I'm sure, but it's wonderful. But it's true. It's
lobster is a bit more problematic. Salmon is also politically problematic, I acknowledge. I mean,
yes,
it's kind of a guilty pleasure.
Yes, that's true, because I've heard other people. I've gotten my whole education and so much of my life shaped from listening to BAI, because I started with the station when I was just about 19 years old, and I'm not trying to give my age away, but I'm up there. And, you know, I just learned everything from you people, and it's a beautiful thing. But you do have the honor of being the first person that I ever called up on the stage.
Well, it is an honor. I thank you so much.
Oh, my God. I'm going to find you now. I'm going to listen.
Well, anything else you'd like to say?
I don't know. Just happy everything. And I'm with you. Like, I'm leaving if things don't get better. But I don't know where to go.
Exactly. I don't know where to go.
Yeah, and I don't have anybody to go with or any money to go with. Can there be, like,
exactly,
a vagabond, like, fan club out there or something? Like, you know, people who want to go someplace and do something else. I don't know.
Yeah, well, you know, I would say back to the land, right? Except that, you know, I don't drive an automobile, and I don't have a driver's license, and I don't have any money to buy land with. So
really?
That doesn't leave me with a whole lot of options.
No, you're pretty stuck.
I'm pretty stuck. That's right.
You're in Manhattan, and hopefully it's going to get, will it get better? I doubt it.
It's hard to imagine it getting any better. I mean, even best case scenario, if the real estate market crashes, you know, I can't imagine it getting any better. It'll just, like, get worse more slowly. It's kind of like global warming, you know? I mean, even if we stop using fossil fuels tomorrow, we're still committed to things going out of whack.
I know. It's very bleak. It's very bleak. And I have children, and I wonder what the hell's going to happen and what kind of a world. The whole thing, you know?
All right, so what are you making with the turkey?
Well, actually, I'm just doing the bird because I'm not going to be here for the day, Thanksgiving Day. I'm going up to spend the day with my sister.
Okay.
It's a very weird Thanksgiving for me. My mom died a year ago on Thanksgiving.
Oh, I'm sorry.
I know, and it's just been a weird year, and, you know, we're just going forward with, like, you know, I guess life has to go on and blah, blah, blah. So, you know, I'm making the bird for my ex. And perhaps he'll have some people over and eat it and do whatever he's going to do with the day.
And then you're going to see your sister.
Yeah, and I'm out of here, you know.
Out of town.
Yeah, but I want leftovers, I have to say, you know, so I'm going to, like, put a limit. Like, please don't eat it all because I like leftovers.
All right, well, are you going to eat some leftover turkey or just...
Hell yeah.
No, you will. Okay. To me, I don't know.
Well, I'm sorry I eat that stuff.
No, you don't have to apologize.
That's what I do.
You don't have
to
apologize at all. And just, to me, it's like, you know... I don't find turkey an appealing thing.
You can't get into a turkey sandwich with
probably I could. If it was really good turkey, I probably could. But, I'll tell you, Thanksgiving in some ways gives turkey a bad name because, like, they make all these jokes about, you're living on leftover turkey for 3 weeks and then everybody's tired of it. I don't turn my nose up at omnivores. I don't. I turn my nose up at bad food.
Well, like I said earlier, I don't know what to do with myself or anything anymore. So I guess I'm just like putting one foot in front of the other. And, hopefully I'll just keep going until, like, I don't go anymore.
Yeah, well,
what else can I do?
That's all any of us are ever going to do.
Enjoy
your holiday.
Thank you so much.
And thank you for the call.
Oh, you're welcome. My pleasure.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
WBAI, you're on the air. Turn down your radio, please. Turn down your radio.
Down, down, tis down. Well, there are a few things that I was thinking about. One is that have you ever noticed the proliferation of Japanese restaurants on the Lower East Side? Why? Why are there so many Japanese restaurants in our neighborhood? How many do we freaking need? Not only are they many, but they're expensive.
Well, Japanese restaurants, the prices are actually coming down, partially as a function of their proliferation. The prices are coming down. Japanese food in New York is not nearly as expensive as it was 10 years ago.
The food's all the same, though.
Not entirely, to tell you the truth. Not entirely.
Have you eaten one of them?
Well, I very rarely do. And one of the reasons is that I actually went to Japan, and the sushi there and the food there generally is just so much better than the Japanese food in New York that anything would be a disappointment. But, there are a couple of places, even in the Lower East Side. There's that one place, I believe it's on 3rd Street, where it's kind of like, it's like Osaka cuisine, and I'm very curious as to, because I went to Osaka and I had like real Osaka cuisine, and I'm curious as to whether it's going to be, authentic and similar to what I actually had in Osaka, and if it's going to be like, significantly different from the more like general Japanese restaurants.
Third and what?
I believe it's third between first and second.
All right.
Yeah.
If it's not too expensive.
Right, precisely. That's why I haven't gone in there yet, because I've been like afraid to look at the menu. But it doesn't look like a real expensive place from the outside.
Oh, check it out. The other thing is, you were talking about favorite restaurants that closed. When Teresa's closed, I came right. It brought me right down. That was one of my favorite Polish restaurants.
Well, it reopened, of course.
No, it's style, whatever the bleep.
It's not what it was. That's right. It's absolutely not what it was. That's right.
Yeah, I'm not even going to attempt to go in there. I mean, the other Teresa's out in Jackson Heights.
Is it really in Jackson Heights?
Yeah. Yeah.
Do you know where exactly?
No. I never called, and I never called information to find out.
I thought, to tell you the truth, I thought that it was in, like, some more Polish-type area. I thought it was like in Greenpoint or someplace like that.
No, when they closed, they had a sign on the grating that said, if you want to visit our other location, come and visit our other location in Jackson Heights.
I'll have to check that out.
Yeah, I'd like to know how good it is. Yeah, the other thing is, if Ray's, all my friends say, if Ray's Soda Shop leaves the Lower East Side, that's it. We're all leaving.
The original Ray's, quote unquote, for those, because I mean, every, pizza place in New York called themselves the original Ray's. But us real New Yorkers know that the original Ray's is, in fact, on 11th Street and 6th Avenue, not in the East Village.
Oh, it is.
Right.
Well, that's a neighborhood, that's become a neighborhood institution. It's a hangout, and I've.
Which one?
Avenue A.
Oh, the one in Avenue A.
And the Ray's Soda Shop.
Right. Oh, the soda shop. I thought you meant the pizza place.
No. The soda shop. That's a neighborhood institution.
Absolutely. That is a neighborhood institution. That's absolutely right.
Like Odessa.
Yeah. Odessa's still okay. I think the quality has slipped a little bit.
A little bit. But they still have great chicken shish kebab. As opposed to the kebab gardens, which I've gone into a couple. That place is horrible.
Hang on, I'm doing, let's see, Teresa's. I hate to tell you, it looks to me like it's in Brooklyn Heights, not Jackson Heights.
Brooklyn Heights.
Yeah, 80 Montague Street.
If
it's the same, it is, in fact, without a doubt, it is. It's, Yeah, it's that's right, because I've actually passed by it. That's where it is. Yeah. Brooklyn Heights.
Oh, good. Okay. Well, yeah. I'll have to go out there sometime.
Yeah, well, maybe the one out there is like, is more, better, more like the old Teresa's than the one in the East Village now. Because you're right, that isn't quite what it was. Just like, what was the Kiev, first it was like the old Kiev, and then
it was
the new Kiev, significantly deteriorated, and like now it's not the Kiev at all. Now it's just like some self-consciously retro pseudo 50s kind of like pseudo diner, pseudo American food,
Yeah, it's just totally plastic. I remember
plastic.
When,
exactly.
I remember when
that's the word.
We used to go to Kiev. The other squatters used to go to Kiev and or to Veselka.
Veselka is still there. But you want to know what one of the real? I feel like we're being very insular, Lower East Side discussion here tonight. But one of the real best kept secrets of the neighborhood is the Ukrainian National Home.
Which is
right next door to Teresa's.
That's right.
But it's kind of like, you have to like walk in, like down this long corridor to get there that hasn't really got a storefront exactly.
Well, that's on Second Avenue,
right?
Right.
It's immediately, it's one door to the south of Teresa's, but you kind of have to know about it. So it doesn't get nearly as much traffic as Teresa's. But, it's better, in my opinion, than Teresa's, and certainly the prices are better than Teresa's.
And the food, I went in there once. The food's good.
Yeah, the potato pancakes are as good as it gets.
Yeah.
As good as it gets. Okay, we're going to move on. Thank
you.
All
right. You're welcome. Bye.
WBAI, you're on the air. Hello.
Hi, I'm once a call to Moorish Orthodox.
You are indeed on the air with the Moorish Orthodox Radio Crusade.
Hi, is this Bill?
Yes, it is.
Hey, I really enjoy your show tonight. I've been listening to your show since around 2004.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, and I'd like to weigh in on a few things on Thanksgiving.
Go ahead.
It's been a few years since I last eaten meat, and
a few years since what?
Since I eaten a turkey, since I've gone vegan.
Yes.
Yes, and but every Thanksgiving, I used to go with my family up to Westbury, Long Island, and we would just have a really nice Thanksgiving dinner, and it was the ultimate in being together with family, and we would all talk and just share stories and just do stuff with family and all that, but I guess over time, just things change in life,
Yes. So what are you doing this year?
It's pretty much a lot different since both my grandparents are dead, and I don't really talk that much to some of my family anymore. So, and since I'm not really into Thanksgiving anymore because of the history behind it and all, I guess celebrate Thanksgiving on my own, in my own different way. Just like not with the imagery of the pilgrims and Indians and all that.
Yes, I know. It's very problematic. For those of us who are aware of the actual history, it's very problematic.
So I guess in my own way, I just give thanks for being alive and
That's the thing about Thanksgiving is that although, the history of how it actually all went down is very ugly and the misrepresentation of it is very, problematic and revisionist, the notion of having a harvest festival is, much, much bigger and more ancient than Thanksgiving. I mean, essentially, it's a harvest festival. And that is something which is deeply, deeply rooted in millennia of human tradition.
Mm.
Right?
Right. So I guess this year I'm just going to bake some scrambled tofu that's seasoned to have that
turkey kind of flavor.
Yeah.
Right. So are you going to invite some friends over, see some family?
I guess this year is just going to be by myself.
Okay. Well, enjoy anyway.
Yeah. And by the way, since you
listen to BAI, you'll be with your extended radio family.
Okay, and since you mentioned 4th Street Food Co-op, I happen to volunteer there.
Oh, good. Good for you.
All right, you have a good night.
You too.
All right, bye.
Bye. WBAI, you're on the air.
Yeah, hello. How you doing?
Okay.
Yeah, how you doing?
Not too bad,
yeah.
Considering. How are you doing?
Surviving.
Yeah, I know the feeling.
Yeah, I was going to ask you, do you remember a restaurant on Bernstein on Essex Street?
On Essex Street.
Yeah.
What was it called?
Bernstein.
I think that might have been before my time, to tell you the truth.
I was in the 80s.
Huh. No, I don't believe I remember it.
Late 80s.
Uh-huh.
And then there was Ratner's.
Of course, that was classic. Yeah.
Yeah.
Right.
And now, like, what they're talking about on the radio now, it's like all this stuff that they got open now. It's all, like, commercial in a way. It's all...
You know, I regret that I never really went into Ratner's all that much. I only think I ate at Ratner's, like, once. And now that it's gone, I kind of wish I had experienced it more than I did.
Yeah.
Although, to tell you the truth, if you like, you know, that kind of, like, you know, old-style Jewish dairy food, B&H, I think, is better than Ratner's was.
And you know what other institution I heard was there for a long time and I never got a chance to go to? Second Avenue Deli.
Oh, yeah.
And the funny thing is that this actor had his wedding shower there, Seinfeld, before he got married.
Oh, yeah, right.
Yeah, and I regret not ever going in there and thinking what they were... You were talking about the pizzeria, like Ray's Pizza.
Right.
Like the original one, the last one in the neighborhood. I mean, like what you said, is on 11th Street, 6th Avenue.
Right, well, that's the original Ray's. I mean, every pizza place in New York calls itself Original Ray's. But I'm not saying that their pizza is necessarily any better than any of the other ones, but they are the original Ray's.
And you know what the funny thing is? It's like their slices, I don't know if they're still big like they used to be.
Probably not.
Yeah, because the slices used to be... A nice portion.
Right. Well, you know, I never really went into the Second Avenue Deli very much either, to tell you the truth. But that was, you know, that was a little bit pricey. And also, that was not a dairy joint. So, you know, that was for people who eat pastrami and stuff, which I don't.
And if you don't mind me asking, where do they sell, like, quote-unquote, organic pizza around the neighborhood?
Oh, huh. Well, I can tell you right now, we're right across Second Avenue from where the Second Avenue Deli used to be. There's an organic pizza. I'm not sure if it's strictly organic, but it's definitely totally vegetarian, healthy, hippie pizza. But pretty good stuff. Good stuff. I can't remember exactly what it's called at the moment. But
Second Avenue between what?
I'll tell you. I think it's between. I think it's between 11th and 12th on the west side of Second Avenue.
11th and 12th?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure it's between 11th and 12th.
You know what? I'm glad that you spoke about the farmer's market on Union Square.
Yeah.
That place is wonderful.
It sure is.
You know?
It sure is.
I need to get back there this weekend if I get a chance.
Is it still happening? I guess it is still happening.
Yeah, I think it's happening on Fridays and Saturdays.
Yeah, well, yeah, that's when it happens, is Fridays and Saturdays. But it's getting kind of late in the year. I guess, you know, they're probably going to be shutting down pretty soon.
Yeah, yeah, probably so. But I need to get out there before they do that.
Yeah, you should, definitely. I mean, it's too late in the season for tomatoes. So you might still be able to get some greenhouse tomatoes.
And you know,
you can still definitely get some apple cider, get some honey, get some...
Some raw honey.
Yeah, exactly. Now you're talking.
Yeah, because you know what? What you were just saying, too, also, it's like the whole neighborhood is, like, changing.
Are you one of the Lower East Side denizen? You are. Okay.
No, I'm in the East Village, actually.
Right, exactly, yeah. Same thing.
It's like... Bars all over the place.
Yeah, I know. I mean, that wonderful Jose Lito's Puerto Rican or Dominican place down on... there's another one, which I mourn, which just closed within the last year, down on Avenue C, I believe it is, between... what's the point of pointing out a restaurant that's not there anymore? But you know what I'm talking about. That was a great place, you know, for rice and beans and fried plantains.
Is that the one on Avenue D?
And avocado salad? No, it was on C between 6th and 7th, if memory serves. Gone. Another, you know, good, reasonably priced neighborhood institution. Gone.
You know what was the neat restaurant? This Mexican restaurant that used to be on Allen Street and on Rivington. It was right on the corner.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Yeah, Tres Aztecas.
Yeah, exactly.
Now, they're gone as well, aren't they?
Man, I'm so pissed off.
Yeah, but, you know, there's still plenty of good, cheap Mexican eats in the neighborhood. There are. Check out that place. I believe it's called the Puebla Bakery, but it's not just a bakery. They've also got, you know, you can get enchiladas there. You can get chilaquiles on First Avenue, just south of 3rd Street, if memory serves. I highly recommend it. It's a little place, little family-run, hole-in-the-wall kind of place. But, yeah, I mean, you can't get margaritas there or anything like that. It's totally it's like a family-run little place. But it's really good.
You know what really kills me about the Lower East Side? Remember back at the Seaport, the South Street?
Right. That's below the Lower East Side, but yeah.
Yeah, right by the, you could get your fish there.
Yeah. Oh, the Fulton Fish Market.
Yeah, the Fulton Fish Market.
Right.
That's going to something in the Bronx.
That's right. Yep. One of the last remnants of genuine working class New York culture on Manhattan Island has now been evacuated. Yep.
And then the funny thing is that places like that should have been landmarks.
I couldn't agree more.
It should have been landmarks. It's been there forever.
I agree.
And now they're building some condo.
Yes, I know. It's cultural erasure. It's cultural cleansing. I'm going to see if I can squeeze in one or two more calls in the few minutes remaining to us.
So you're there every Tuesday, right? Every Tuesday?
that's the theory, although I'm not going to be here next Tuesday because we're preempted for the Pacifica Archive special, which should also be very interesting to tune in. But we should be back the Tuesday after that.
Okay, I'll definitely listen in.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you again.
Okay. WBAI, you're on the air.
Listen, it's always wonderful to hear talk about food, but you forgot to say that the war in Iraq and Afghanistan is over. It's finished. It's done. People have lost any sense of the reality of the world, and now it's just the pleasures of smelling the pizzas and the Mexican and Chinese and Korean food made by people basically of peace for the old harvest. But the point is, Bill, I know that you cringe every day as the Blackwater investigations go on as to why innocent people got shot down. Even the FBI can't figure it out. Anyway, the thing is that I don't know how to say this. I have a way of saying it. Ralph Shoman and Maya Shone, tonight may have been a rebroadcast, but they talked about the slaughtering of all the poor little cattle and ducks and geese and turkeys and everything. And it's such a hideous thing that I stopped eating meat when mad cow disease, because that's how I know I'm not mad. Because if I kept eating...
I don't know, Monroe. Are you sure you stopped in time? WBAI, you're on the air. Hello.
Hi. Oh, Bill, hi. Peter Stewart, how are you?
Okay.
Good. Welcome back. I wanted to talk about cultural, erasing. It seems like in our brave new corporate American cultural-led world, nothing that is, rooted in the past, distant past, is just, it can't survive in the new atmosphere, whether it's the Munson Diner on 49th Street or the Kalish Kafirs in Pakistan or the Yazidis in Iraq. Or
you got it.
And
it's nice to get a call from somebody who gets it.
Yeah. I was going to add, though, like the 12th Imam, I believe the Munson Diner was occulted up to these mystical mountains. I think Liberty, that would be Azadi in Persian. So. My father is from there, by the way.
From where?
Liberty. White Lake, to be exact.
Uh-huh.
Born 1910.
Oh, I thought you were going to say from Persia.
No. I spent some years there. No. I'm a Yankee Dutch type.
Mm. Okay, well, thanks for listening.
And welcome back. And I would hope you would do a thing on the Kalish Kafirs. It does not look good for them.
The Kalish Kafirs.
The last remnant pagan group, so-called, in the north of Pakistan.
The people of Kafiristan.
Yes, DNA is even bearing out the so-called apocryphal supposition that they were descended from Alexander's troops.
Yes.
It's ringing true.
I know. There's that's a whole other show. We've spoken about them, and we will speak about them in the future.
And so, there's another one that the Yazidi group that's in Republic of Armenia.
Yeah.
They're having some problems there also.
Please remember that this program is supported by the listener members of WBAI New York. If you like what you hear, please consider becoming a member of WBAI or renewing if you've already joined. Basic membership is $25, but we accept any amount. Help us keep free speech alive.